Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Les, over the last few weeks, we have gotten into the pattern of starting with WWE, and I think that happened basically because of all the Vince McMahon mess and the talk of the sale, and there is actually a little interest and in some news on that front that we'll get to at some point over the course of this hour. But I think based on the fact that you are raring to go here on something very specific and something you have an awful lot of insight on, we should start with AEW, more specifically Dynamite this past week, and the opening contest where the world champion, MJF, defeated Kanesuke Takeshita in one of those title eliminator matches. I still don't understand why you can't call it a non-title match, but that's not the point that we're going to nitpick here today. You probably, if you're on the Twitter machine at all, have perhaps seen this footage if you didn't notice it yourself Wednesday night on Dynamite, and I don't know how you couldn't have seen it, and that's exactly the point, Les.
Yes. We're talking about the Blade and the lack of artistic endeavor by the referee, by the young Japanese kid, to disguise that it was being passed from one guy to the other. And it was just sloppy. I mean, the reason I want to talk about today, too, is a week or so ago, maybe a couple weeks ago, I saw a video of John Moxley. Two videos actually showed where he's like sitting on the in the corner, on his butt, leaning back into the turnbuckles, and you see him take the blade out, cut himself. Then on the other one, he's laying flat on his back. He reaches over, takes it out of his wrist tape, and gags himself. Boys, kids, girls, whoever, there's an art to this. And by God, you haven't found it. It's crazy. I mean, it's like a magician to me, showing you how he did the trick. Why do I want to watch him do the trick if I know how to do it myself? There is an art to using a blade as well as making a blade. But I want to start, and the whole, I said on Twitter, there's probably, myself included, a bunch of guys from our generation. If you need someone to teach the art of blading, any of us would be more than happy to apply and actually teach these people how to get. Part of the illusion should be that he's bleeding, but how did that happen? Back in the day, if I used a blade and went to the dressing room, if I heard a couple of the boys say, "We were watching, we didn't see you bleed," then I'm guessing pretty much nobody did. Because the whole idea wasn't to let people watch. And going back to AEW, was the year where that big match where they had the two rings and Archer and Moxley was,
yes,
two of the factions, and Archer laying on his big fat ass, taking his blade out of his tape, and Jesus Christ, it's disgusting, to be quite honest with you. But anyway, let's talk about the deal Wednesday night. Okay, first of all, have I ever had a referee pass me a blade? Yes, depending on when I'm going to use it. And, what the situation is, I'll carry it or I will have a referee pass it to me. Okay, let's say the referee's going to pass it to me. Okay. All right, I'm going to have the heel hook me in a front face lock. Start working that front face lock. And then once we drop to our knees, and now the referee is coming in. At this point, the referee is circled, is circling us. And he can slide his hand in his pocket and get that blade in his hand. And never, not before he even has to get to me. But anyway, so the heels got me in a front face lock, and we're working that front face lock, and I'm selling it, and I've got my hands up near my throat trying to release the pressure. And, of course, the referee's putting his hand under there to check. And at some point, when he puts his hand under there to check to see if I'm being choked, that blade goes into my hand. Clever idea. And then once I use it, I keep it. whether in my hand or stick in my tights or whatever. But the point is, I don't try to pass it back to anybody, you know? Now, in terms of carrying it yourself, I've never put it in wrist tape. I know guys who have, but they never laid on their back and showed the entire audience, hey, I'm taking my blade out. I either taped it inside my tights, my trunks, top of my trunks, or I carried it in my mouth. I never taped it. Some guys tape it on the end of their finger and cover it with a loose piece of adhesive tape so that once they're ready to use it, they pull that adhesive tape tight and the point of the blade comes through the tape. But I was always afraid to do that because I felt, you know, I might cut somebody at the wrong time or in the wrong place for that matter. So anyway, a lot of the old timers, the carrying it in your mouth is, it's just like you put it between cheek and gum, you know, like if you're doing snuff. And when you're ready for it, you cough into your hand and the blade comes out in your hand. Put it back and, you know, put it wherever you want when you're done with it. But I mean, the point is nobody sees you get it, you know. The other place, back when you could only buy wrestling trunks in one place, Carl and Hildegard's K&H in Columbus, Ohio, you could always order under tights, under trunks, in the same color and same material. That way, if, you know, the leg pulled up or the top, the under tight is the same, you know, is the same color. I always used to buy them that way. But what I would do, so after I made my blade, just get a little flap of adhesive tape, put half of it on the tape that is wrapped around the blade, and the other flap is still showing. I tape it to my under tights. Everybody pulls their trunks up, their tights up. It's common. So just before I need that blade, I put my thumbs down in my trunks, and I'm pulling them up, and as I'm riding that right hand back to pull them up, I catch the blade, out it comes in my hand. It's an art. God bless America. It's an art. And in terms of using it, I've always hit it. You know, sometimes if you're going to post me up and I'm on the floor, and when I go down to sell it, I'm going to go down with my, and my head's going to slide under the ring. And then, you know, it's just a quick move and you're done. I have seen, talk about artists, Terry Garvin, who is, he and Ronnie wrestled as a team, obviously, but no relation. I have seen Terry Garvin get run into a ring post. The blade, obviously, in his hand, I don't know if he carried it, I think he carried it in his mouth. But as he hits that post, he's throwing his hands up like he's trying to stop the momentum. The blade comes across his forehead. He makes, you know, light contact with the post. When he comes away, he's bleeding. There's no way you can possibly say he cut himself. It is an art. And I can't say that AEW cares or they're embarrassed, but I certainly am. You know, to talk about the business changing in ways that, but Jesus, why don't you, if you're going to expose everything, why don't you just start, hey, on the show tonight, fans, who would you like to see first? What kind of match would you like to have? Realize it's a sarcastic joke. Years and years ago, I remember Ole Anderson said, there's going to be a day when it's like, next week, it's fans get to call the finish. I don't know if it'll ever come to that, but God, this is just, am I making sense to you or am I just rambling to hear myself talk?
No, you're making a ton of sense. I mean, if you want to suspend the disbelief, then you got to go all the way through. Why are we, I mean, and listen, there are more cameras in these on these shoots than ever before, right? I mean, when you were, they were taping footage from the arenas to run on TV the next week, there was one, maybe two cameras. And how many were there on the weekly TV show, even though blood was very rare there? Only a couple, right? And they didn't move very well.
Yeah, so, usually at least one stationary and two handheld. Maybe.
Right.
Running three cameras probably is at the max, but maybe four at the max.
The thing for me is that now that there are so many cameras, that should just underscore the need to be really slick about this. And instead, it's just gotten so much more blatant than it ever used to be.
Yeah, yeah. Or nobody cares that you see it, or nobody's ever said, hey, kid, would you like somebody to show you how to use the blade? But I'm serious, you know, it is an art. Like I said, if I had used a blade tonight, went back to the dressing room, a couple guys said, I was watching the match, didn't see you get the juice. That's good, because then I figure nobody saw it. And that's the way it should be. You know, just like I don't, when I watch America's Got Talent, some of these magicians are so amazing. God, they're good. And would I like to know why? It's more entertaining that I don't know it. Again, I think that makes sense too, doesn't it to you?
It does. It's so funny. You were talking about this and the art of it, and I immediately started thinking of two specific wrestlers. But I want to throw this caveat in there when I describe what they did or how they did it. It only came after watching some of my favorite matches of theirs multiple times that I understood it, not in the moment. But you were talking about one of the ways guys used to keep it was, you take a break off a piece of the blade, however you did that, and wrap it in tape in your thumb.
Let me explain that before you go any further.
Yeah.
You take a double-edged razor blade. You break it in quarters. And you tape everything but the corner of that quarter and just let a little bit of that corner stick out. It doesn't, I tell you the truth, I never measured. It was by sight. And that's all you need. You don't need an axe. You don't need, and that's why it's capable. You're able to carry it in your mouth or in your tights or so forth. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I want to explain how you made a blade. Go ahead.
No, not at all. But you talked about the thumb, and I immediately thought of Don Morocco, because that's where it seemed to me that he liked to keep it. And again, this is upon repeated viewings of some of his best matches, especially since I grew up in New York in the WWF back in the day, against guys like Jimmy Snuka and Ricky Steamboat, where there were those real heated personal issues, and you would have those strap matches or cage matches or things like that. And he liked to have that in his thumb, and it literally looked like he was just flicking the sweat off of his forehead, and all of a sudden he gets posted or something happens and he comes up bleeding. And Flair is the other guy I was thinking about. And if you watch Flair, he didn't do this all the time, which is part of what made it great. You would notice on a bunch of Flair matches, he'd have that just that little small strip of tape around multiple fingers. He didn't have his fingers taped together, but he had little strips around a handful of fingers, two or three on one hand and two or three on the other. And there was sometimes, he didn't always do it like this, but there were times where, just like Morocco, he had it in that little strip of tape around his finger. But there were plenty of matches where he had the tape and never bled. So it wasn't like it was something you would easily pick up on.
Sure. Great. Yeah. It's there. So it's not used 10 times, but the 11th time he's using it, there's a blade in it. You don't know that.
Exactly.
Because you're accustomed to seeing it. Yeah. Yeah. I can't give you a name off the top of my head right now, but I remember a lot of the guys used to do that. Yes. Put tape around his a couple of fingers on each hand, and yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's I hate to say. Listen, we all know wrestling's a work, okay? But it's an art, just like magicians and everything else. And it's distressing to me, wondering why. Okay, we don't want to be good anymore because everybody knows it's a work. That's the most nonsensical attitude I can think of, you know? Hey, we know movies are all the work, so, hey, if there's an Indian shooting at the wagon train, let's drive a Corvette across the back and let people see it. Why not? Or find out that the wagon's only got one side, the side you're seeing. You know, that's not a real cowboy. That's not a real cowboy saloon. It's just a flat. You walk, there's nothing behind it. I mean, you know that if you visit MGM Studios or something, but you don't want to see that in the middle of your movie, do you?
No, absolutely not.
You know, and I don't want to see this young Japanese guy get here. The referee's giving him his blade. Oh, that's great. He's must be going to cut himself. Yeah. Okay. Oh, he's giving it back to the referee. Why? Can he carry that to the back by himself or what? I don't know. And yeah, it's frustrating for somebody that's done it and took pride in doing it and nobody's seeing it. So yeah, call me dated, call me old, call me whatever you like, but I'm sure I'm not the only one that would feel this way if we took a poll.
So in looking at the show itself, I don't think it was filled with terrible stuff, but it wasn't anything that was ever going to pop a number. You might remember sometime, it was either last week or the week before, I came out here and I told you I saw a lineup on a particular Wednesday and I thought to myself, there's no way there's going to be 900,000 viewers. And to their credit, that show greatly outperformed my expectation. But I had that same thought Tuesday afternoon looking at the lineup that Tony Khan had posted on social media for this week's Dynamite. And I said, come on, there's not a chance. And statistically, in the world of entertainment, 899 is the same as 900. It's the same thing with radio ratings. If it's 2/10 in either direction, it's considered flat. So he can realistically in the world of entertainment claim that was 900,000 viewers and nobody in this business would call him on it. But 899 from last week and from what we had with Mark Briscoe, and yes, that's a special occasion. But I mean, to get under 900,000 viewers is not surprising to me looking at that lineup. But, you know, we've been talking about these numbers and that's not good.
Well, you know, and you and I, before we started recording, we're talking about the trios match.
Yeah.
And our leader, our fearless leader, Dave, mentioned that he couldn't understand putting that in the main event slot, right?
Yeah, well, he had a tough time with the trios match on Rampage that they did.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It was Rampage.
Yeah. Didn't understand why you would do that, knowing that it was obvious who was going to win. And then they turn around and do the same basically thing here on Dynamite, although those three competitors, if you're into that style, are pretty spectacular. There's not really any intrigue as far as who's going to win the match.
And, you know, we're not, this is not all about cutting AEW either. One other thing I just, and this is not negative necessarily. To me, Brian Danielson, one of the best damn technical workers in this business, period, end story. And that's what when I tune in to see a Brian Danielson match, that's what I want to see. You know, good, solid wrestling, takedowns, you know, and some story to go with it, obviously. But him and Roosh, I didn't count, but I don't know how many times we get into this. I'll punch you 10 times, you punch me 10 times, then I'll chop you 10 times, you chop me. Then I'll headbutt you 10 times and you headbutt me. And I'll go down and sell like crazy, and I'm going to make a Superman comeback. I don't understand. And yes, I know the fans love to go, okay, fine. If that's all this is about, then you guys are doing the right thing. But again, I enjoy watching Brian Danielson. I've enjoyed, let me go back and give you the history on that real quick, a little bit of the history. When JR sent me a video from the Memphis developmental, because these guys are all moving to me, so I could see them. And I'm looking at what, and here's a guy, needs a suntan, but damn can he wrestle. And that was Brian Danielson. And before they got to me, WWE released he and Brian Kendrick, Spanky. So I never, Spanky came later and actually just came and said, can I work in your roster? And, yeah, sure. You know, but yeah, I had looked forward to working with Brian at that level, but I've said this before on this show and I'll say it again. The one thing to me that defines, Brian Danielson's, value to this industry and why I rate him so highly is, number of years ago when he was with Ring of Honor, there was a show in Dayton, Ohio, and I had gone to the show. And at the end of the show, saying goodbyes to everybody, and Brian came down the steps and to say goodnight. And the first thing out of his mouth said, what did we do wrong? He didn't say, did you like the match? Did you watch the match? Was it a good match? Was I cool? He said, what did we do wrong? And to me, that one statement exemplifies why he's so damn good. Does that make sense to you, or am I just being an idiot?
No, absolutely, because he didn't come there looking for praise. He came there looking for you to give him instruction on how to improve on what he was doing.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, so I'm high on him. And so I'm not knocking him. I'm just saying I wanted to see more of Brian Danielson wrestling opposed to punching and kicking. But, again, he gets paid to do what Tony Khan wants, not what I want, so. I understand if he bows to the man with the money instead of me. Anyway, that's enough negativity, by God. Where are we going next?
Oh, no, wait. I think we've got a little bit more.
Okay.
By the way, in talking about the ratings, believe me, I completely understand. Every show can't be a million or a million two because, you know, you just wear everybody out doing that stuff over and over again with those big matches and big stipulations and all that. So everything is not going to be some ratings bonanza. That's just fact. I take great issue, however, not just with that trios match because you understood what was going on there before anyone could even have to tell you what was happening. I am not opposed to the Acclaim closing any show. On this program with this audience, everybody loves them. That's not a problem. They're young, and at some point, just like they did with Darby Allin 18 or so months ago, you got to start putting them in those kind of slots so that people can get accustomed to that. But this match, specifically with the opponents, the Guns, not where I would have done it.
No, I agree. And you made a statement, too, when we were talking about putting the belts on the Guns. About they're not expecting somebody back, obviously.
Oh, well, I mean, I watched the Guns win this match, and clearly there'll be a rematch. Maybe the Acclaimed will win it back at the pay-per-view, which is coming up in a few weeks. But the idea that we're now this serious about the Guns and they had defeated FTR a few weeks ago, I watched that and saw the result and thought to myself, it appears Tony is not expecting FTR to return because he's out here trying to get somebody else ready in a hurry.
These guys aren't ready for that. They're not. I'm just evaluating what I see. It's not that there's not some possible, but the kids, they're not ready to carry those straps, I don't think. So, but again, yeah, and I don't know about the 1 o'clock and his dad either. I'm not sure where that's going. The other thing, that first thing crossed my mind, this is kind of like Dominic and Ray.
Oh, yeah, last thing you want to really be repeating, right?
Yeah. Well, yes, and I don't want somebody to say they're doing what they saw in WWE or they're doing what they saw in AEW, you know? I may watch somebody at the competition show and I may say, damn, I wish I'd have thought of that, but I'm going to catalog it in the back of my mind, and I may do it on down the road, but it won't be at the exact same time the competition's doing it, because I don't want somebody thinking he's copying everything he sees on the competition. And I understand that fans may not understand all that, but when you've been in the business 62 plus years, you understand it whether anybody else does or not. So yeah, that's it's not something I think to have both companies running the father-son thing at the same time is not a good idea for somebody. I'm not sure who, but for somebody.
You just talked about cataloging, and now you reminded me of something else with the gauntlet match this week and how Jericho avoided, at least for a week, having to get into the ring with Ricky Starks and wearing the mask and what have you. And I was telling you this off the air. It's worth mentioning here, too. I like that idea. He always executes it well, but note the sentence. He always executes it well, which means I've seen him do this a lot more than once. And just talking to you off the air, I recounted at least two other times he's done it in the last handful of years. And like, as you said, to me, that's something you do once every so often. But he's already done it once before this company was formed. And I realize that's now we're talking about 3 years ago. But, you know, part of this fan base, you know, no one tells you that you shouldn't have a long memory. So, I mean, I vividly recall him dressing up as Pentagon at All In. He did this same sort of thing with Rey Mysterio in WWE. And I'm pretty sure, I can't pinpoint it, but I want to say he did it at least one other time. And if I can name now after this week, three times he's done the same thing, you're doing it too much.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Well, it's just, you know, like I mentioned about the run-ins, you know, when that match was over, and Jim said, this can't be AEW. I said, what? He said, there's no afterbirth. I said, give him time. And sure enough, we got afterbirth. And so, yeah, I said, yeah, it is AEW. But that's one of my problems across the board. It is. Not with AEW, but with professional wrestling in general today. You see too much of the same thing. You know, it's good to let guys have their heads, but there's also something about one of the things that we were always told, watch the match that goes on before you. And if they're doing something, don't do it. Nobody tells these people, and I know that, because I see match number two having some of the same moves as match number one, number three having the same as number two, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I wish A.R. Fox would do some dives. I truly do.
And not enough dives for you?
No, there was only 8, I think, that we counted. Oh, God. Anyway, it's a nice place to have a wrestling show.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so we kind of referenced this last week a little bit. Tony Khan expanded on his thoughts here on it last week before we turn our attention to WWE here in just a couple of minutes. The idea of a streaming service. Obviously, they've revived Honor Club, and we talked about the possibility of them going to business with their television partner on the internet side with BR Sports maybe and doing an AEW streaming service and then, you know, musing out loud, why wouldn't you just merge Honor Club into that? Well, Tony was talking about an AEW streaming service recently in an interview, and he recounted all the episodes of Dynamite and Rampage, how many pay-per-views they've done, and all this content in the library, including the Ring of Honor library, which is a wonderful asset for them to have. And he's talking about the how much sense it makes to make that library available to fans all over the world on demand. But Dave noted this week that an AEW streaming deal is not on the horizon right now. However, I would point out to you that also over the course of that conversation, Tony expressed a great deal of optimism that the next television contract for him would likely remain with Warner Brothers Discovery for a significant increase. So keep an eye on that, because maybe the streaming service is only not in the immediate future plans because it's going to be part of the rollout for the next contract.
Yeah, that's a good possibility. And, that's good. The more revenue the company brings in, the more sound everything is, and the more these guys are being paid well. I know that. I don't know anybody's salary, so we won't even get into that. It's none of my business. But I know they're well paid. And to continue that and to turn a profit, to expand the business. But, the one thing, too, you don't want to expand too fast. How many restaurant franchises or Taco Bell, Taco franchises, there's things like that, you know what I'm talking about, are up, so-and-so is closing. Why? They grew too fast.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, you got to crawl before you walk and walk before you run.
Hey, the company I work for, which is the biggest probably radio conglomerate on planet Earth right now, actually went through a several-year period here where they were teetering on the edge of falling apart. And the reason for that was because they expanded too fast. You know, they went on a massive buying spree, and eventually those bills come due. And it took actually a change of leadership at the top and a lot of reshuffling and hard work to remove iHeartMedia from the financial ruin they were really on the precipice of as recently as 2 or 3 years ago. So these things absolutely happen, and you got to have good stewardship to avoid those things from happening.
And they don't always happen quickly. Some of the young people that listen to us had never seen a Kmart or a Sears.
Sure,
yeah. Sears and Roebuck, and yet Sears and Roebuck was one of the most powerful department stores in this country when I was a young person. And God knows Kmart is the guys, they were, Kresge was a five and dime store. And it turned, they are the people that began the Kmarts. And those are the first big, I guess, what do you call them, box stores
or
whatever.
Big box stores, yeah.
Big box stores, yeah. Kmart was growing like crazy. Then Kmart bought Sears and Roebuck. Wow, now they're even bigger.
And they both went under.
Yes. Now we don't have either that I'm aware of. Well, and you just heard about Bed Bath & Beyond.
Oh, I mean, what a nightmare that's been.
Wow, and those, God, can you tell me a mall you've been into in a city in this country and that's a fair-sized mall, you haven't seen one of those stores?
Yeah, I mean, you look at that just from the amount of stores, like to your point, and you would think they're printing money, and it's completely the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the point we're trying to make for those listening is that Tony's not an old guy. This is not like he's Vince McMahon or Les Thatcher, right? He's not on his last leg. He's got a lot of years in this business if it's done properly. So he's got plenty of time to grow. The thing, but to me, part of good growth, Vic, is ironing out the problems as you grow, not creating more.
Excellent, excellent point. Good way to phrase it, too, and a great way to us to transition to the conversation about WWE, which will be happening in just a minute or two. First, however, I want you to talk about being available for weekend training camps, especially if you need lessons on those blades and T-shirts, because yeah. After you get done with that, we're going to talk about the noted T-shirt designer, Jerry Lawler.
All right. Very good. Yeah. If you're interested in doing a one-day seminar, weekend training camp, I'd be more than happy to get with you on the information and the cost and everything that goes on. And if you are interested, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. I'd be more than happy to get with you and send you out that information. And talking about T-shirts, the Briscoe Booster T-shirt was the first ever pro wrestling T-shirt on the market. Jack Jerry and myself put that out in 1972. And the artwork, as Vic is mentioning, as mentioned, is by the King, Jerry Lawler, who we're going to talk about. But anyway, you can get that T-shirt or a I'm a Les Thatcher Guy T-shirt at Pro Wrestling Tees. So, and yes, the King, man, and he had wrestled that night, hadn't he?
Oh, my goodness, don't say that. Did he really? Because I know that one of the things I saw, apparently, that he was out. Maybe he had wrestled the night before. I'm not sure. I'll have to look that up. But
maybe,
apparently,
but somebody told me he had wrestled like either that night or the night before.
Might have been the night before. Apparently, he was out for lunch with some friends. And after lunch, back at his home or wherever he parked the car after lunch, is when he suffered a stroke, unfortunately, discovered in the driveway of his Fort Myers home. Hey, Fort Myers, Florida. No kidding. My dad lives near there. In any event, and I'm sure he did it years ago. I didn't even realize he'd left Memphis. He's down in Florida. But apparently things are looking up for the King. He's been moved out of the intensive care unit. And by the time you listen to this, he should be back at the house. Thank goodness for him. And working on his outpatient rehab to get his speech together, because apparently he does have some what they believe will be temporary damage to his speech and his cognitive skills. So he's going to be working his way back
right
on that.
It was scary there at first. They were talking about he couldn't had no feeling in his legs or the right side. Man, yeah. And you know, this is one of the things, too, when I don't talk about it on here, and I don't, there's no need to. But a lot of the guys, they're not nobody my age is wrestling. I don't think anyway. I hope not. But anyway, I don't like seeing these guys for a couple reasons, but it's not because I don't like them. It's because I respect them and I know what they brought to the table when they were at the zenith of their careers. And so I'm not interested in seeing them, now, in any lesser capacity. And if I were still running shows and booking shows and I wanted to get one of these guys, it would be as a special referee or maybe to be a corner man for, say, a babyface tag team that's having trouble with a heel team with a manager, or as a special referee, or just for a meet and greet and autograph session, you know? But, it's like I'm a huge Celtics fan and a Bill Russell fan, my God. But I don't want to see Bill. Well, Bill's passed away now, but 2 or 3 years ago, I didn't want to see him back in basketball shorts either. But I loved remembering how it was to watch him in the Boston Garden in 1961.
You just reminded me. That's on my weekend to-do list. You know, there's a new documentary about him simply called Russell on Netflix that I'm going to check out.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
I don't have Netflix, damn it.
Well, listen, wait until they finish this crackdown on all the people who are mooching off of somebody else's accounts first before you consider jumping in, because maybe you'll be able to do that instead.
My wife uses, I think, my stepdaughter's
yeah.
or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah, you if you have it, you can let two other people use it or something. Isn't that the deal?
I believe it's a lot more than two, to be honest with you.
Is it? Okay, I'm not sure. But
it's not entirely going to change because they've kind of gone back and forth on this. But apparently by some point near the end of March, they're going to be moving to a model where they're going to offer anyone who's sharing your account the opportunity to open their own. It's still under the other person's account who you've been sharing, but it is a little, but it is separate. And that person, you can either open your own and get your own account, or you can stay under that person's account who you've been using. But there will be an extra fee involved for that person whose account you've been using.
All righty then. But yeah, I'd love to see that. A wrestling fan sent me a book, a hardback by Bill. And talk about never mind how great a basketball player, he was just a hell of an intelligent man, period, end of story, right?
Oh, my goodness, he's brilliant.
Yes, yes. But no one has ever won 11 national world championships in the NBA in 13 seasons but Bill Russell, period, end of story.
Not only did he do it playing, he won a couple as a player slash coach.
Yeah, that's right. And real quick, I do want to shout out to my fellow Buckeye, LeBron James, for breaking this Kareem scoring record, too. God bless him, man.
That was an amazing feat. Unfortunately, they didn't close the deal and win the game. But, I mean, you know, knowing he needed something like that was 36 points on that particular night to break the record. And he got 38 through three quarters, basically. It's just, yeah. I mean, that guy seemingly can turn the clock back anytime he wants to, and he hasn't really had to turn it back very much because he's still playing at a ridiculously high level after 20 years.
He's the Tom Brady of basketball, right?
Very much. I would think so. Yeah, that's a great comparison.
Yeah, well, he wants to play with his oldest boy, and you know, he's healthy enough. He just broke Kareem's scoring record. If he plays another 2 years or so, he's going to put that scoring record out of sight. You and I will both be in the ground before it ever gets broken.
Oh, too. Yeah. I mean, if he plays as long as he's planning, he's going to be a good bit over 40,000 points for his career. And yeah. Nobody could have imagined Kareem's record being broken. He held it for nearly 40 years. So I can imagine how long LeBron's going to have it.
And LeBron broke it in less time.
He did.
And took Kareem to set it, yeah.
100 something less games, yeah. I believe.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, LeBron went from high school to the NBA. Kareem, of course, had to go through college because back then
you
had to put in 4 years of college before you could play in the NBA.
Well, when Kareem played, you couldn't even – there was a JV and a varsity.
Yeah.
A freshman team. He had to play – he didn't even play with the regular UCLA Bruins, the varsity team, his freshman year. He had to play with the freshman team. They had freshman teams that actually – crisscrossed the country or the conference just like the varsity team did.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking, too, Wilt Chamberlain quit college in his sophomore year, Kansas, and before he could get in the NBA, he had 2 years before his college class graduated, and he played those 2 years with the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yes, he did.
Until he could get in the NBA, so...
Like the Generals didn't have enough trouble, right? See Will Chamberlain coming at him.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I remember seeing them at that time, too.
Oh, my
yes,
goodness.
Sir, I do. Anyway, this is not a basketball show. What the hell? You and I have gotten off track.
It can be. How many podcasts do you want to do? Let's see.
Well, I don't know. How much money can we make?
We'll table that discussion for another day, but we will get to something else since we've been enjoying these last few minutes of conversation. Let's get to something else that I think we were just two of many who greatly enjoyed. When was the last time? Actually, the answer is probably one of those Bloodline segments, but you get where I'm going with this. Last time you saw something as good as Cody Rhodes and Paul Heyman this past week.
Damned if I know. Damned if I know. That promo was pure gold. I mean... there's no way to say it any other way, right? I mean, yeah, Jesus, I sat and listened to that, and I thought, you know what? Here's the thing. I've said this how many times on the show. Cody's strongest weapon in this business are his promos. And firstly, he doesn't talk at you. He talks to you. And it's not – I'm not screaming. I'm not, mention I'm going to throw him over the mountain or this or that, the other thing. I'm using factual things that you can believe, you have seen happen, or you can identify with. And that's what makes him so great at this, you know? And I sat and watched him starting, and Paul came out. And when they got, I thought, damn. Well, in fact, I said to my friend Jim, I said, you know what? If AEW had somebody that could write storylines like the Bloodline and a group of guys who could promo like Cody, they'd rule the roost, man. They would. Or whoever. Or if WWE had a couple more Cody's to do promos and, more storylines like the Bloodline. But that's, I don't know if the Observer gives a promo, best promo guy of the year or something on the best of. I got to remember to read that. But damned if he's not, he should be, I think. But yeah, that was gold. That added another layer to the upcoming match with Roman, did it not?
It did, and the story he told was 1,000% factual, which might come as a shock to some folks who hear the name Paul Heyman and think shyster, which Paul to some degree is and probably takes a little pride in that. But he absolutely, what Cody said is the God's honest truth. Paul Heyman called Dusty Rhodes back in the day for that feud with Steve Corino, promised him he was going to pay him well, and absolutely did. Dusty made a number of appearances in ECW. He was a semi-regular for a little while working that program with Corino.
Yeah, he sure was. Yeah, but that was brilliant. It was truly, truly brilliant. It was, you know, never mind the matches. It was the high spot of the show.
Yeah, and I love the response from Heyman because, you know, it's the con man saying, listen, this was great, but you're not going to con me because I'm the con man around here. You're not going to get me right into thinking it's about something else. This is really about what's happening at WrestleMania. It's got nothing to do with the family. But still manages to throw in that jab at the end because he's just not going to let you get away with any of that stuff.
Yeah, good. Yes, it was amazing. Yeah, I think, well, you know, in this, I've said on this show before that when Cody went after the NWA title in Chicago in that first big show that before AEW, that match was made by their promos. It was over before the bell rang to start the physical part of it. And Roman's a hell of a promo guy, too. So if they can realize how much time they've got between now and Mania to build this.
Hmm. Yeah,
I mean, if it's done, you know, it's yes. Yes, that's the art of this business. And yes, he is what a promo guy. Yeah, very good, very good. But like I say, I think the key is he talks to you, not at you. Well, yeah. And he talks at a level that you can understand and you want to listen to, unlike my buddies at the Acclaim who scream at the top of their fucking lungs. Jesus. I want to stuff a rag in his mouth when he starts that. I do. Oh, he gets heat with me, but not the kind he wants.
Well, while we're talking about great promo segments and scrupulously avoiding any more talk about Mr. Bowens, I wanted to make mention of the fact that we will get some advancement, I believe at least. If you're one of the first listening to this podcast after it's been posted to the site, Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and SmackDown has not yet aired, there is supposedly a tag team title match tonight. That one, number one contendership was determined last week. And so, you know, there was no movement on the Where is Jey Uso front other than the fact that he was not there on TV with the Bloodline last week. So I imagine we're going to learn a little something about what direction they're headed in with that because the Usos have a title defense tonight.
You know what? It wouldn't surprise me. It may not happen, but it's the first thing that really crossed my mind when I saw that they'd advertised the title match. Jimmy comes to the ring, looking around, waiting for brother. Jay walks down in street clothes, tosses the belt in the ring, turns around, and walks out.
That would be interesting.
And, you know, it's smaller things like that that make the bigger things work, you know? And, I just think that would be awesome, I think. And, you know, they can get a lot out of that too. And like I say, you put Jay and Sammy against his brother and Soto in a tag match. Yeah. You know, that's brother versus brother, I think, makes more sense. I mean, I'm not saying either one of them is something I want to push all the time, but that makes more sense to me than son and father. Doesn't it to you?
I agree. And I mean, listen, those of us who've been watching this long enough remember how well brother and brother didn't work for the Hardys in WWE, and yes, how well, by at least Impact standards, it did work with the same two guys in Impact Wrestling. So it can be very hit or miss, but I think off the strength of this angle, it's not something I would want to have a prolonged issue between the two of them. You know, they can be at odds with each other, but in terms of how many times I put them in the ring against each other, I wouldn't do that often. But heading towards WrestleMania with this particular issue, I think you could make a whole lot of headway and have a really terrific thing that a lot of people will want to see if you did that brother versus brother match next month.
Yeah. Well, you know what? And stop and think about any brothers that you might know. Have you ever seen them beat the hell out of each other?
All the time. Later? Yep, that's right.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that just struck me as something that if Jay walks down, looks at his brother, looks at the opponents, pitches the belt in the ring, turns around and walks out. And actually, you might get that match at WrestleMania too, brother versus, you know, or that tag match. Well, you can't get that. Sammy's being something else, but yeah. I mean, it's things like that to me I want to go into WrestleMania with, or any big show, right? Something strong.
Or maybe you do exactly what we were talking about here, do the tag match at Mania, some more miscommunication causes them to lose, and then Jimmy versus Jay is second from the top next month while Roman gets a rematch against Cody.
Yeah, that's good. When are you going to start booking there, huh?
Hey, I'm available. You know, let's talk zeros, preferably a lot of them.
Yeah, a bunch of them, right? Yeah,
absolutely. I'm here.
You can
I'm
put
ready.
A one in the front as long as you put seven zeros behind it.
Minimum. Come on.
Yes, minimum.
Especially.
As much as pressure would be on you in that situation, you're damn right, minimum.
Yeah, especially if Mr. McMahon's office is still occupied at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of which, was there some talk of a name of a company who might be interested in buying? Was it MSNBC?
Oh, well, that was interesting. CNBC, Nick Khan.
CNBC, yeah.
One of those NBC networks. CNBC is primarily their business outlet. They do all sorts of stock market and mergers and acquisitions. That's the business channel they have, the competitor to Bloomberg. And apparently Nick Khan had done an interview in the last few days over there talking about the possible sale and put a bit of a timeline on it. I think there are a couple of newsworthy things out there in the last week or two regarding the sale, because Nick Khan sort of put a 3-month target or timetable on this. He thinks it's a fast process, maybe 3 months. Interestingly enough, I think the specific note you're referring to is how one of the hosts of that particular show said he has been hearing through the grapevine that Comcast, which owns NBC Universal, obviously WWE's television partner for Raw, and also owns CNBC, did not have serious interest in buying WWE. And I suppose a CNBC, NBC Universal employee might actually have reputable sources on this issue. But Nick Khan immediately disagreed and says that he and the company are still bullish on Comcast being a possible owner. Comcast, of course, over the top of NBC Universal. And he insisted that they got a really warm reaction in the marketplace from people who seem interested about buying the company, which is why he put that 90-day timetable out there. Obviously, he doesn't want to publicly cross off any particular buyer, right? You want as wide a market as possible. But it is interesting that, and then you wonder, you know, where did this person get his marching orders? Did he legitimately hear this from someone in the company? Or is someone in the company who says, hey, brother, I signed your checks. I'm going to need you to go out there and throw some cold water on this because I'm trying to drive the price down.
Huh. Yeah. Wow. There's going to be some chicanery, is there not, when we're talking about billions of dollars?
Always.
I wouldn't want to book that show. I've never played with numbers that big, nor will I ever live long enough to do that. Something that you brought to me is the deal since Levesque has taken over as in the creative thing. Fans are noticing a shift in the product presented, in addition to some past release stars returning. And I just wonder, you know, as you see that too, how are those stars wondering, looking over their shoulder with Vince being back? But Seth is one that says, having worked with Levesque, in the ring as well as behind the scenes, he says, "What I've worked with Triple H in many different versions of him in the ring, behind the scenes, many years. So honestly, the transition really wasn't that different." You know, in that respect, Vic, I think the top guys won't notice it. I mean, the extremely top guys,
yes,
like Seth.
Exactly. Yep.
They're not going to notice it nearly as much as the middle card and preliminary guys. Not at all.
Yeah. And to your point, conversations with Austin Theory and Chad Gable were a little bit different. By the way, I should point out that our own Denise Salcido conducted these interviews, and you can actually see the video of them at F4WOnline.com. But Austin Theory was talking about the difference in working with Mr. McMahon as opposed to Paul Levesque. And I'm paraphrasing here. You really do want to see these interviews for yourself. But basically talking about how it was wonderful to be associated, obviously, with Vince McMahon on television for tons of reasons we don't need to get into here. But it was also very, this is what we're doing. This is how we're going to do it. And under Paul Levesque's tutelage or him running the creative end of the company, there's, theory say, a little more give and take between he and Levesque about what to do, when to do it, when to say it, how to say it, a little more freedom for him to sort of find his own way, which I think is a nice, which was an interesting thing for Austin Theory to say in terms of trying to really find out what the difference might be between McMahon and Levesque.
Yeah, yeah, that's true too. Yeah, and he gave Theory back his first name.
He did. I mean, he's probably got over with Theory right there.
Yes, I would think so. And they mentioned too that Gable is featured a lot more since Levesque's been, and we're seeing more wrestling from him. And he is such a damn good wrestler. You know, I look for more of that. I just, you know me, and if you got a 2-hour TV show, give me a couple wrestling, I mean, you know, legitimately good wrestling matches in that time, and not everything is stunt shows or comedy or whatever. But I would think, again, you know, it's the top guys have got, here's the thing too. I know how he's changed since marrying Stephanie, since the business is much different now. But when Harley and Steamer and I were doing the Elite Pro Wrestling camps and we're spending quite a bit of time together, I know Harley mentioned to me one time that Paul watched a lot of Harley's old tapes because Paul was a heel, obviously, and would call Harley and discuss them with him and get Harley's feedback on things he might or might not do. So there's some old school in Levesque too, and realize who trained him. Killer Kowalski.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, you would know this, obviously, but maybe some of the folks my age who were actually watching Triple H on the way up and then becoming the game and the perennial champion may not have been old enough to recognize just how much Harley Race stuff he did do in the ring.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. Yes. Harley was, and that's, you know, what I see. The things that I miss in the business now are the details. Well, we're talking about the blading, and that's a huge one. But just detailed things, you know. Well, the things that have tied the bloodline storylines together are missing in that company as well, in other stories, and in the other companies too. And it's the details, I think, that ties everything together. It's the little things that make the big things palatable and workable. Yeah, I don't know how this is going to work out. And of course, you know, here's the other thing, too. We're talking about a sale of WWE, and you'd think, well, if, you you know, if whatever the company, whatever corporation buys it, you know, it's going to go ahead and run itself. You don't know that. And so if I were just an employee at any level, I'd have to be a bit leery, I think, you know. And when I say that, let's stop and think about the sales of professional basketball teams or professional football teams. And there's been set, well, what formerly were my Redskins are now the Commanders in Washington. Snyder's about to, you know, they're looking to push him out and somebody else to buy that team. And there was a team that, how many Super Bowls? They won three.
Gibbs won three with three different quarterbacks.
Yeah, with my man Joe, yes, absolutely. And with John Riggins, and then you get a new owner who has a different vision, and, you know, sometimes it doesn't work, and it goes to hell, you know. So, yeah, so a change in ownership doesn't necessarily mean it's going to stay the same or be positive. And only time's going to tell what that is, you know. One of the reasons that WCW actually was put in a position for Vince to buy it at such a bargain price was the fact that it was in a, you know, it was under the umbrella of a multi-level corporation with all kinds of holdings. And when they'd move one of their executives to WCW, and that executive thought, oh, this is a step down. I hold my nose. This is professional wrestling or something. And having been a part of that company for a period of time, I saw some of that too. And so, yeah, you know, the fact that this is a huge corporation willing to pay $1 billion or whatever the hell the sale price would be doesn't necessarily mean it's just going to carry on as it was, you know. So there's got to be a bit of apprehension with everybody, I think, don't you?
Oh, without question. I mean, because you just never know. I mean, it sounds easy to say that, you know, whoever buys it will leave the power structure alone because if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But that sounds all well and good until the transaction has taken place and things have changed hands. There were a lot of people inside of Ted Turner's company who didn't think a whole lot was going to change. And they basically turned that place upside down. So you never really know. It doesn't matter what they tell you before they sell. You're gonna have to wait until the ink's dry on that contract before you figure out what's really going on there. Because even when you take over this thing and you can say beforehand, you know, we're not going to make any changes. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. We want to leave everything alone. Listen, they're going to take, if they know what they're doing, they're going to take a few months and not do anything because they're studying. They're watching all of you. It's just like when a coach gets fired in the middle of the season or something. They're not just the interim coach is not just auditioning for the job. They're looking at these players, you know, and potential next coaches. How do these players play now that this guy's been fired? You're auditioning on a weekly basis because the next coach may not be interested in you.
Sure. Well, you know, going back to the territory days, with a change in bookers. Well, when Charlotte let George Becker go after so many years and George Scott got the book, quite a bit of talent changed. You know, guys came in that George was comfortable with, guys who he'd drawn money with in other territories, and guys who he knew would, you know, he could work with. And that was quite common, you know, with the territories. So, yeah, everybody's got their favorites, if that's what you want to call them, right? So, yeah, there's a possibility of big changes, little changes, but certainly some changes.
Without question. And we'll end on this note here for this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. But before you tell everybody where they can get some great DVDs, I wanted to mention this to you regarding your beloved Washington Commanders. I don't know if you were aware of this, Les, but apparently not only is the NFL trying to run Dan Snyder out of the league, but he has apparently seriously lost the Loser Leaves Town match because he's listed his house in Potomac, Maryland, too. He's got,
whoa. Yeah. All right, Dan, get out of there.
But here's the interesting thing to me. Well, first of all, let's get into how ridiculous this house is. It's got a gym, a spa, 18th century style landscaping. I'm looking at the photos of this house right now. 5 bedrooms, 10 bathrooms, and all you need to do is show up and write Dan Snyder a check for $49 million. That's how much he wants.
Wow. Why don't we get that for a weekend getaway place? What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. Our summer residents like Ted DiBiase, right?
Yeah, there you go.
But here's the interesting thing to me in terms of, you know, just how vilified Mr. Snyder has become for a lot of valid reasons that you can Google if you're not familiar with Dan Snyder or football at all, for that matter. It's actually not even being listed as his house. The listing actually says this mansion was the formal estate of Jordan's King Hussein and Queen Noor, which is in fact true, but they're kind of skipping over the current owner.
Wow.
Wait, if you're spending $49 million, I think you would want to know who the person you're actually buying it from is.
You would think, yes.
Yeah.
Of course, if I had $4,900, $1 million. Damn, that's crazy. What do you know, I watched that. I know this is off the subject. We need to get moving. But that on the HGTV, or it wasn't on that. I forget what channel. Bravo, I think it was. $1 million listings in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And looking at some of these homes, and I'm thinking, okay, but what would I do with this, right, if I had it? Right? I'd get lost in there.
Well, you know, Brad Pitt is apparently selling his house out in L.A. too, and he wants $40 million. And the story making the rounds is that he's looking to downsize. What does downsizing from $40 million look like exactly? Is he thinking about, you know, $32 million, $28 million? Yeah. Like, what's the next house?
Or maybe just a little shack for about $8 or $9
million. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, exactly.
I guess I better run by these tapes so we can get the hell out of Dodge. Huh?
Yeah, so listen, here's where you get an opportunity to get not only some quality professional wrestling action from guys before they were stars, but you can now contribute to Les's fund in his drive to purchase Dan Snyder's home and make sure he leaves town.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes. Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content on each. Both are two DVD sets, matches, interviews, and extras. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceover, me with more of the historical behind-the-scenes stuff, and Joe covering the play-by-play. You can get, and we're getting ready to do a third volume 3, which Joe tells me should be out around Mania time. But anyway, you can get volume 1 or 2 already at joe-dabrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And then, of course, the Brian Pillman Show's Anthology 20th Anniversary Set, 4 DVDs, over 15 hours of content. All 4 of the great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001, matches, interviews, awards, and so many extras. For those who don't know about this show, none of this has ever been on television. But this is where ECW, WCW, and WWF, along with some great independent talent, all came together to honor Brian Pillman. And you'll never see those three companies under the same roof on the same night anyplace else. So if you'd be interested, a lot of the great stars from all three of those companies are on these shows. And you can get those at PillmanShows.com or the two addresses I mentioned earlier, Joe-Dabrowski.com or ProWrestlingLibrary.com. So check those out. And Victor, you can attest to the extras that are on that Pillman thing, right?
Oh, the whole thing is fantastic. The extras are just that little cherry on top of the sundae because, as you said, especially for guys in my age group who lived through that particular point in time, how surreal it still is all these years later to see folks from three different promotions on DVD. Well, actually, 4 or 5, if you want to count OVW and HWA, on these shows at the same time.
Check them out. And before we go, Super Bowl, who you got?
Philadelphia.
I think I do, too.
Yeah.
Since
we were talking about this
off the air. Put the Bengals out of business, I demand revenge.
Oh, okay. So yeah, sour grapes on Les's part. I just have a hard time envisioning Mahomes not looking an awful lot like the poor fellow who ran from his life from Tampa Bay's defensive front a couple of years ago, especially even though his ankle's got to be much better than it was 2 weeks ago. you know, the Eagles have the ability with their front seven to create that same kind of pressure for him. And while he has great receivers and an all-time Hall of Famer in Travis Kelce, you know, I just don't know that he is going to have the time to be able to throw over the top. He may be stuck dinking and dunking to Kelce all day long, just running for his life.
Yeah, that's a fact, too. You're absolutely right, my friend. So I guess that winds it up for another weekend.
It does. So when we return for next week's edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, we'll check the tote board and see just how much less is raised of this $49 million he needs to purchase Dan Snyder's home. And we'll also get a chance to take a look at the matches for Elimination Chamber, because that's next Saturday. So we'll have a chance to weigh in on that, as well as New Japan's Battle in the Valley, where Mercedes Moné is going to be challenging for the IWGP Women's title. So we'll take a look at some of the big matches that are happening there as well. Should be a whole lot of fun. And we're looking forward to doing that, but that's not until next week, which means we got to wrap up this one first. For the legend, Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to spend some of it here with us this weekend. And we look forward to getting back with you again next week.